they originally had me going to the minor league game, but you know, with the clock and all the things that we have in the game now, I really wanted to get here. And I mean, this is pretty much their lineup, right? So, you know, they got a couple guys that would be in there, but you know, I wanted to face big league guys. And you know, they're getting ready for the season. This is the last game of spring, so it was really important for me to get in there today.
That was Kevin Gausman of the Toronto Blue Jays, Kevin Barker. He will not be starting the season opener, as I think a lot of us thought might be the case going into spring training. But 3 hits yesterday against the Pirates, 1 earned run, 7 strikeouts, no walks, 52 pitches, 35 strikes. We need to hear from him at some point today, probably tomorrow, because today's an off day, how he feels. But certainly looked good enough to me that if he's okay this morning, if he wakes up and feels fine, then he's probably got to get one of those starts in Houston, don't you think? Or do you think that maybe they'll just err on the safe side, push him back a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're talking about the last game in Tampa. It sounds like they're sort of gung-ho about him pitching in
the fourth game. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that was sort of, you know, you have conversations back and forth. He's sort of driving the boat when it comes to, you know, routines and how he's feeling and how he wakes up and feels. And, you know, I'm sure they'll have serious conversations about that and want to get the best out of him. That extra day would be nice for him, right? That's, you know, he's working on 5 full days of rest if he's pitching that fourth game. That's, you know, it's a big deal. I don't know if you want him going any further than that. If you did, he'd have to go somewhere else and pitch. And, you know, it's a lot of work, right? If he's okay and the velocity was good and, you know, I know he wants to make a few more adjustments when it comes to holding runners on. He wasn't very good at that last year. I mean, those are tweaks that you could do in season. It's probably not something he's working on now. You know, it's more about how he feels and just the arm speed on both of the pitches. And can he throw an unpredictable slider to a left-handed hitter or to a right-handed hitter middle away, you know, stealing a strike that way. And it seemed like yesterday that, you know, he was happy with, I told you this, for me, it was more about the conversation after the game than it was what you were actually seeing. Now, the 7 strikeouts, right, when he needed it, he could go to it and throw to some quadrants and an elevated fastball to a lefty and, you know, throw the split finger when he wanted to get strike 3. Like, that's a big deal. But for me, it was more of, I'm not so much more worried about now of my injury than I am just the quality of stuff and mechanics and, you know, the finish and, you know, getting the sign and letting it eat and throwing strike 1 and being competitive that way. So, yeah, look, they're a way better rotation with him in it. And we mentioned this. Getting off to a good start is key. And if you can do that with one of your better starters, if not your best starter, that's only going to help you.
Yeah. The 2 more sleeps, by the way, until season opener. The Blue Jays will take on the Tampa Bay Rays at the Trop. The Jays will work out tomorrow at the Trop. And probably at that point, I would imagine we will get more, a little more clarity as to the status of Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson and who makes the team as a result of that. We're going to have a lot of pitching talk ahead in the show. This is going to be a lot of fun. Greg Maddux, Hall of Famer.
Wow.
Greg Maddux, Pedro, 2 best pitchers I've seen and covered in person. Greg Maddux will join us later on in the show. Sam Blum covers the Angels for The Athletic. He will be along in a few minutes. We'll talk about Shohei Ohtani's. It wasn't a news conference yesterday. It was Shohei Ohtani's statement reading yesterday.
Let's point the finger.
It's not a news conference. It's not a news conference if people don't get to ask questions. So anyhow, we'll talk about that. Sam Blum joins us actually in the 3 o'clock hour. David Sampson will be along as well. We'll talk to him about how he thinks the Ohtani news conference presentation went, and what would he do if he was the Dodgers front office. You're probably noticing we have a new set. We've got a new time slot. We will be on 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. As was the case last year, we'll be doing the bulk of Blue Jays talk after the game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. They might even put some of those in TV. We shall see. So, new digs, new time slot, same great content.
Well, hopefully. Look, you can say one thing. The team's good. Now, is it great, man? We'll see. But it's a good team. Like, they got a chance of making the playoffs. And for us to have an opportunity to have a conversation every single day about the American League East and about the Toronto Blue Jays that are good, I mean, that bodes well for us. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they stay healthy. They figure some things out with their lineup. They score as many runs as they can possibly score, and they win as many games early on. That's the key, right?
Is 10 games on the road to start.
Oh, yeah.
10 games on the road to start because the Rogers Center is still undergoing renovations.
Yeah, we're going to find out if that new approach at the plate, you know, the trying to do damage, laying off the things you can't do damage on and getting your pitch no matter what the count is, we'll see if that trickles down 1-9. Hopefully it does. Hopefully they get off to a good start and it's a fun year. And fingers crossed, the American League East is good. The American League's good. You know, baseball right now is good. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
We will give you our picks tomorrow. I guess we'll do our picks tomorrow.
I don't think there's any big surprises either.
We got a couple. threw a couple of curves in there.
Baseball right now is pretty top heavy. I mean, there's a couple of teams you're on the fence about, but other than that, it's pretty top heavy.
The wild cards in both leagues are doing what the wild card is supposed to do, creating a lot of uncertainty. It's hard. I would suggest it's harder to pick wild card teams this year than it was last year.
Well, you know what that wild card thing does is gives an 82, 83, 84 win team
absolutely
an actual chance, which I'm not sure I like that, but
I'm
it does,
you.
And it gives us a chance to talk about them.
All right. We mentioned that Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson, we expect them to start the season on the IL. I would expect that Alek Manoah would start in the IL as well. So if Swanson and Romano, no, not if, they are starting on the IL, who has to, I hate the phrase step up, but who do you think has to shoulder more of the load with those two gone? It can't just, early in the year, it can't just be Chad Green.
Well, I mean, that would help, right? I mean,
There have to be a couple of guys who step
up. Well, I think they're telling you by eliminating the breaking ball from Chad Green that he's going to be a big deal, at least early on, right? They're going to throw a lot on his plate. They're going to ask him to get the meat of the order, no matter if there's a couple of lefties or three lefties in a row. So, you know, there's some urgency when it comes to get mechanically sound, get it out front, have a little better extension, you know, be a little bit more limber. Coming off Tommy John's not the easiest thing when it comes to being limber enough to, you know, get the velocity you want, get the break you want. That's why there's some urgency when it comes to we've tinkered with the breaking ball, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. We're going to move on and go with our strength, and that will tell you that, you know, every one of these games, even in April, matter. I look, for me, it's the rotation. You can sort of say what you want about the bullpen,
right,
and what's not there. And they got a top 10 bullpen when everybody's healthy. Mm-hmm. But they also got a top 7 or 8 rotation when everybody's healthy. And having Gosman back's a big deal. Now you can, you know, get a quality start from a guy in your 4 slot, which is just a huge deal, right? If you look what their team's trying to do from 1 year to the next, probably being top 6 or 7 in quality starts is a lot to ask 1 year after another. Probably not going to be able to do it, but they could be a top 10 or 12 in quality starts. So you're looking, you know, last year they had, 72 quality starts. If you're getting somewhere in that 60 quality start range and you're scoring maybe somewhere around 5 runs. Now, it's not the easiest thing to do, right? I think only 6 teams last year scored 5 runs or more. That's a tall order because there's a lot of unknowns, especially bottom of your lineup. What are you going to get? Like, there's some things that have to happen. But, you know, you're thinking that if you can somewhat right the ship with just what you got in your rotation will help out what you don't have in your pen. So, yeah, I don't like to point names. Don't like to point the finger at a certain name. But I will say if the rotation is doing its thing, at least early on, it will make it easier for John and Pete Walker to make the right move. And that's the key, right? Making the right move, bringing in the right arm.
Arden Swelling, one of Sportsnet's sideline reporters, along, of course, with the lovely, talented Hazel May, does a column every week, Gap to Gap, on sportsnet.ca. He had an interesting item today that got my attention in his column. Jimmy Garcia's fastball velocity. Okay, velocity's not everything. We know that.
Mm.
96.5 this spring. Second on the team behind Nate Pearson. No surprise, 97.4. Jordan Romano, 96.3. We're sleeping on Jimmy Garcia a little bit in terms of how important he could be for this team?
No, well, I think just by optics alone, the way you saw him at the end of the season, or, you know, some chunks of the season last year, you weren't oozing confidence when he was running out of the bullpen, were you? Like, there, you know, there's a lot of things there. He's got lots of pitches. And you know, he's married sometimes to some secondary pitches and doesn't always trust what his strength is, which for me is a power guy. Mm-hmm. You know, stop trying to finesse people. Like, I know there's lefties you have to throw breaking balls to, some changeups to, and, you know, you got to throw a wrinkle in your fastball occasionally to get some weak contact when that warrants it. But for the most part, you can come out of that pen, be a 2 or 3 pitch guy and letting it eat. Like, just, you know, be aggressive in the zone and trust your stuff. And for me, I think that was the conversation in the offseason with Petey and him was, you know, stop trying to finesse people. Just stop trying to trick people. Your stuff's good enough and we need you. That, I think, is you got to ooze confidence, right? Mm-hmm. You got to tell whoever you're telling it to, confidence-wise, that if you do this, it's going to translate to on the field, and we're going to see the best out of you. And I think that's sort of maybe what you're seeing is, I know he did some work with his lower half. That's the thing, right? Everybody comes in the spring training in the best shape
of their lives.
I see you rolling your eyes. But it means a lot with dudes that are a little bit older, you know, that have tried to make some mental changes when it comes to, you know, just sort of be who you are and not try and be everything. And sometimes Jimmy, for me, at least tries to be everything, and he doesn't have to be that. And now he can sort of throw a fastball to a fastball hitter and a fastball count. That is sort of the thing you're trying to do, especially when you're the highest leverage or one of the highest leverage guys, and especially with the couple of guys that are not going to be in your, you know, in your highest leverage time slots. You're going to be asked to do some things that normally you wouldn't be asked to do. So, yeah, I like it. Like, sleeping on him? No, probably not, because I know they are very high on him. But I think we still have to see, you know, him get out a Juan Soto in the 8th inning with 2 outs and a runner on second. We haven't seen that consistently. Hopefully we'll see it this year.
What's your confidence level in Chad Green right now? 1 to 10 closing out Thursday in Tampa.
I have a lot of faith in Pete Walker. I've had numerous conversations with Pete Walker, and he's yelled at me because I've said, you know, I don't have a ton. Like, it's the velocity's not there the way it was, and the break on some of his secondary stuff is floppy. Like, you can tell coming out of the hand, it ain't real good.
Your
like, he's
word,
thinking
it's
about
moody.
It's very moody. Like, and when it's moody like that, you tend to not have a ton of confidence. And he says, this is Pete Walker, tells me that he was working on some things, and you know, he's a little bit further removed from Tommy John, which, you know, he's not thinking about that anymore. He's more thinking about mechanics and locating and getting ahead. And, you know, when he's in 2 strikes, can he be efficient or is it nibbling? Am I trying to let the hitter get you out instead of me actually getting you out? And I've been told that I should have more confidence. So I have a lot of faith in Pete Walker. And from what you saw in the last outing he had, which was very aggressive, and there was no messing around, right? You get the 2 strikes, you come after dudes. Like, you ain't messing around. Here's my best elevated fastball. Here's my tunneling slider off that. It's going to break. It's going to, you know, you're going to have a tough time telling the difference between the two, and I ain't going to give you a chance with the floppy curveball. If he stays away from those things and just pitches to his strength, he'll be fine. Again, I'm sure they're going to maneuver. They're going to match up. They're just not going to throw him right out the gate into those spots. They're going to match up and you know, put the right guy in the right spot, especially with not having Romano here. Because Romano was sort of that guy, right? You have the 9th inning taken care of, and then you worry about everybody else. And now they sort of have to match up a little bit more now, and I'm sure they'll do that. They're very smart off the field. I make fun and poke fun at that. But they are very smart about game planning and knowing who's split finger and whose slider matches up to whose bat path.
You're channeling your inner khaki.
Oh, boy. How about it? It's the new me.
It is the new you. Yeah. You know what? You can only fight against progress so often.
Oh,
at some point you just really? Wave the white flag.
Should
and go,
I though?
I think so.
Huh.
I think you need to embrace your inner.
Can't
inner
they work
khaki.
Together and
can't they all get along?
I don't think so.
No, not a chance.
Though
they've
told us they
can't get along. No.
Yeah.
The lineup. The best, considering you were down in spring training for 2 weeks.
Yep.
The best story, the most positive story in terms of the Jays lineup. Dalton Varsho?
No. I mean, he's one of them. Look, I think having Turner hitting cleanup is a true positive.
More slug this spring than we – spring numbers? More slug this spring than we saw in the past?
I just think it's those at-bats. It's that being that tough out. It's – knowing what you're trying to do and not letting the pitcher do something you don't want him or you don't want to do. That's a huge deal with traffic. Not everybody can do it. He's shown you he can do it. I think Vladdy pulling balls in the air, that's mm-hmm. I mean, that is huge. Same with George Springer. That's ginormous. And I do think having John Schneider coming out and saying that they are willing to move Bo around according to who they are facing. They understand how important the season is. They understand what Bo means to everything. He's their best hitter. Why not use that? Like, why be married to one spot? Now, again, it's not all the time. And, you know, you have to be good at sort of maneuvering around, you know, the attitudes and the mindsets of your best player, because it's not the easiest thing. You've covered some great players. They're not the easiest dudes to talk to,
No.
You know, or to talk into things. You got to be good at that. So I think that's one of them. I do have some questions about the bottom of the lineup. Like, you know, Kiermaier's talking about, and we've seen it, talking about pulling balls in the air. Will he be married to that? Is he going to try and do that all the time? You know, that's why you're seeing John put him in the 7-hole instead of the 9-hole. Right? Because he's changed his approach. He ain't getting paid the way he wanted to get paid. So what's it tell you? You have to make adjustments. Is that going to work? Like, you know, you do it with spring training is one thing. You do it against great pitching who's trying to get you out, knows what your weakness is, and sort of knows what you're trying to do. How's that going to work? So, you know, what's IKF going to give you when he's playing? Can Kevin Biggio hit ninth and be himself, right? It's the tall phone booth thing. That's what he was working on in spring training, is not getting outside the phone booth. He wants everything to happen in small areas, right? It's not how it used to be where he had the leg kick, he had more forward movement, and he had a bent upper half, which he's trying to get the ball in the air. That ain't going to work. You want to stay in the big leagues, you got to make adjustments. So it's tall in the phone booth. There's a lot of things that have to happen at least the bottom of the order to turn it over to the top of the order. And, yeah, look, I like that they're individually attacking approaches. That's what you need to be.
We had to make, Shy, Arden, Ben, David Singh, and myself, we had to make our picks on Sportsnet.ca different. And we're going to make our picks, as I said, we'll reveal our picks tomorrow or Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I said, and this is not, certainly not unique to me, there have been several national writers who have made a point of thinking this as well this year. I've said I think at some point Bo wins a batting title.
Yeah.
I think at some point, I think he wins multiple batting titles before this season is over. He finished third last year,
yeah.
306. Does moving around in the order for Bo, does that change anything for him? You know, you move into the cleanup spot, you're there for a reason.
Yep.
Do you think Bo has to guard against changing his approach based on where he is?
Absolutely.
In the lineup?
Absolutely. I mean, his words, he came out and said,
he likes, you know, consistency.
Most great hitters do.
Sure.
They like a routine. They like showing up the yard and everything's the same. Like, you don't have to make adjustments. The game's so hard to do now. Like, I need to worry about very specific things. I don't want to worry about all these other things. And it sounds simple to us. Well, what's the difference hitting second and fourth or second and third? It shouldn't be a big deal.
Castell Varsha.
But it is a big deal. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think he's a, you know, when people are asking, and I think it was Hazel, or it might have been Caleb Joseph who had the interview with him and asked him what's the most important stat for him. And he said batting average,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, khakis are rolling over in their graves. They don't like to hear that, boy. You know, what are you talking about? Batting average? Why is that a big deal? It's a big deal to him. That's why I don't think it will be a giant deal. You know, that's why John feels like he is capable of moving him around and the at-bats will never change. You want predictability. That's what you want, right? That's what you want from your best hitter is predictability. Bo, I think, will give him that. The at-bat will never change, right? He has his two-strike approach now.
Mm.
I will say this. You can tell, at least in spring training there, early in counts against certain guys, he's trying to ambush. He's trying to get frisky party mm-hmm. out front a little bit more, right? He's trying to do some things, do a little bit more damage to the pull side, at least early in counts, which we have not seen him as a big leaguer. So what that would tell you, and sometimes what that would mean, is the slumps might go a little longer. The batting average would dip a little bit mm-hmm. more. Will he be okay with that? That's the one thing. But he's sort of evolving and trying to be what Bo wants to be.
He,
not what other
do you,
or team the team wants him to be, which I think is kind of cool.
Do you have any idea what he will be when he's the finished product as a hitter?
That's a great question.
I'm not necessarily talking about numbers, but it seems to me that Bo, because we've seen the power, it seems to me that Bo could go anyway as a hitter.
Yeah, I think it's what you're paying Bo to be. What's that?
I mean,
is that an on-base guy? Is that a run producer? Is that a home run guy? Bo wants, sounds to me like in conversations I've had with Bo numerous times, he wants to be all of it. He's not apologizing out loud to wanting to be the best hitter the Blue Jays have and maybe one of the best top five hitters in baseball. He doesn't lie. He's not, you know, hiding that. And there's certain things that go with that, right? If you're going to do that, you have to be all of it. You have to be able to hit a home run when they need a home run. You have to be the run producer when they need that, right? The tough, really tough pitcher that you're facing, like a Zach Wheeler, you let it travel, and he hits a double into right center and drives in the runner standing at first in the eighth inning. He's trying to be all of it, and I really think he can be all of that. Why set a certain number, right? I mean, you know, everybody in spring training has certain numbers that they write down. Mine was 270, 30, and 100. It's rare that you ever get that, but it's something you can shoot for. I have no idea what Bo's is. It sounds like that he is shooting very high with the average. I don't know what the home runs and the RBIs are, and I think that's sort of depending on where he's hitting in the order. If they move him around a lot and he's sitting with dudes on base and he gets a lot of at-bats like that, and the khakis are telling him, right, telling John that if he hits third against this guy, he'll come up more than Turner. I don't know the other names, but you know what I'm saying, right? The best hitter will be up when it matters the most. Then those numbers that they want to go up will go up.
Yeah, he's going to have to. He's the type of guy who's going to have to hit his way to a batting title because he ain't walking his way to a batting
title. He's very aggressive.
I found that. I just find that really interesting because I do think that I think he can basically do whatever he wants.
And I do think too, because of his bat path, you know, he's an inside out guy. He thinks right field a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now he's trying to adjust that, obviously, what we just talked about. What's the Rogers Center doing to that? Ball ain't carrying the right center for whatever reason. What's that do to it? You know, is he trying to hit more singles over there? Is he trying to get more hits over there? Or is he trying to drive it over there? You know, he's came on our show and said it's been playing some tricks on some people to right field. Now, I'm not saying it's him, and he didn't say it was him.
No, he didn't say it was him.
Because he hits the 18 hopper with the best of them to right field, and not everybody can do that. But when you start trying to drive a ball to right field, you tend to swing at different things, and when the ball don't go where you think it should go, that starts playing tricks, and then what do you do? So, yeah, I think he's capable of being whatever they want him to be. Not a lot of people can do that.
Yeah, that's really one of the things we talked about last year and a little bit in spring training, but the impact of the renovated Rogers Center. I mean, I haven't been down there yet, so I don't know, never mind what it looks like. I don't know if there's any other changes that are going to be made. We won't know until we see the team.
Yeah.
Until we see the team here. But it was when we spoke to Bo, he made it pretty clear that the halfway through the year, when the ball's not leaving your home ballpark,
I've asked some higher ups about the ballpark. They're very quiet about that. I don't know what that reason is, because you wonder, like, are they fixing it? Is it something they can do to the fence? I don't know what they can do. I'm not smart enough to figure that out. But it's obviously a thing, and it's a thing in the clubhouse. And that will make hitters adjust and go outside the box. And when you do that, you tend to take things that you shouldn't be taking. And what's that mean? You fall behind in counts. Mm-hmm. And we all know, because of how good the pitching is, when that happens, stats go down. So I don't know. I don't know how they fix it. Maybe they have fixed it.
It did strike me as odd that it wasn't more of a story this off season. I would have thought there would have been more questions about, did you do a look? They've got enough khakis there that I'm sure somebody can do a study on. Do a study on why did it happen? What happened? Is there something that can be done to change it? Now, it's perhaps they just don't want to tell anybody. That's fine. They're certainly not obligated to tell anybody.
They are pretty good at pitching at home. Like, you know, they are yelling and screaming about run prevention.
Yeah.
Something's going to suffer there, right? It's using the entire field. You can't do that anymore. And obviously, like, a guy, Vladdy, when you don't want to hit the ball to right center, it changes you. Length of your swing and what you're swinging at. I'm not saying that's why he's chasing the ball in off the plate and the ball away off the plate, but it will make you think about it.
David Sampson is host of Nothing Personal, the podcast with David Sampson. He's a former MLB executive. He's one of our favorites. Lots to talk to David about. A little bit of news today. ESPN apparently is looking at pulling out of their TV deal with Major League Baseball. We'll talk to that. Could just be a bargaining ploy. We'll talk to David about that. But the big story around baseball, of course, Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani did a 12-minute media briefing yesterday with his new interpreter. It seemed to go well. Kind of. Still a lot of unanswered questions. We'll talk to David Sampson about that. Sam Blum joins us to talk Ohtani. And Greg Maddux, Hall of Fame pitcher. 23 years in the majors. Any guesses to how many days he spent in the DL?
15.
Shouldn't have told you that. It's Blair and Barker at Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A reminder that we will be available via podcast, wherever you get your favorite podcast. Drops about within an hour of the show. So because we're on 2 to 4, you know, perhaps you're going to be in traffic. We always could be in traffic. You can listen
funny,
to us. Going to the game. You can take us to the game with you. Wherever you want to do it again. We are on from 2 to 4 Eastern for the immediate future on Sportsnet 590. Fan until the Leafs get eliminated, at which point a...
be nice. They may not.
Be nice. It's bringing David Sampson. He's always nice. He's host of Nothing Personal, the podcast with David Sampson. Former MLB executive. David, were you surprised, as much as surprised as I was, that Shohei Ohtani was shocked? I said shocked that there's gambling at Rick's.
I just can't believe everything that's gone down, culminating in that statement reading yesterday that surprised me that members of the media, Jeff, if you were told you couldn't ask questions, couldn't bring in your camera, couldn't record, I don't understand why you would go. Why not just have him fax you the statement that you can then put into an article or a tweet?
Look, I admit that I thought he would get up and he would say, I'm sorry for the distraction created to the team. I didn't gamble in baseball. I had no idea this was going on. I know Major League Baseball's investigating. I'm willing to cooperate. I'll cooperate with the federal investigation. Have a great day. We'll see you on opening day. I don't know what I expected yesterday. I saw people immediately rush to, oh, it was great. He spoke for 12 minutes and he opened up and people were reading his body language. And oh my, you know, I think he's innocent. And I mean, I look at it this way. Really, a lot of it's performative, David. I think it's performative. Bottom line is the feds are going to take this thing where it goes, I think. And you know, Rob, I'm sure Rob Manfred, I'm sure their committee's going to investigate. But I think the real fear here for Rob is what happens when they start pulling at the threads, right? Like, we already know that the illegal bookmaker was introduced to Shohei Ohtani's interpreter at a poker match where David Fletcher, Ohtani's teammate, was at. Like, that's Rob's fear, isn't it? This investigation kind of drags other baseball people in.
Well, first of all, the investigation has to drag because unlike other times when you can get something done quickly and announce a fine after a fight, when someone charges the mound, you try to just announce the suspension and be done with it. This is the type of thing when gambling's involved, you have to take your time because you have to get it right. And I don't think that MLB will be able to get in front of the IRS or the federal investigators. I think they'll have to be behind them, and I think they'd rather be. I think they hoped that this statement yesterday puts it to bed and they can just let it go until the end of the season even would be ideal and worry about it in November because you don't want this cloud hanging over you, but I just don't know they have a choice.
David, if you're running the Dodgers, what's your game plan every day?
My game plan is not to have him talking in front of my logo yesterday. I'll start with that game plan. My second game plan is that I'm calling a team meeting and I'm sitting with the team and I'm telling them, here's how we're handling this, gentlemen. We're not talking about it. The media can ask it all they want, but we're going to say the following sentence. I am not discussing that subject. Would you like to talk about blank? I went 0 for 4. I went 2 for 4. I gave 5 good innings, and my splitter was fantastic. I'm really worried about the Giants, the Diamondbacks. I'm not answering one question about it.
You know, one of the things that really that I think when people look back at the initial handling of this, David, is going to stick out to people. It did to me. And look, I don't know Andrew Friedman that well. I met him a couple of times in the field. But when Andrew Friedman calls a clubhouse meeting and tells the players, as this was reported, that Shohei Ohtani was helping the interpreter out, covering his bets. You've kind of implicated, if you're Andrew Friedman, you've implicated Shohei Ohtani right away. Because it's not a good thing to help out a guy cover bets with an illegal bookmaker. There's just, between that and the fact the interpreter's CV looked like George Santos's CV, I'm looking at the Dodgers and I'm really having a hard time not looking at them as just being completely, utterly incompetent in this whole thing.
Yep.
So let me take one piece of that first, which is the resume issue. When we signed Ichiro in 2015, we were told by Ichiro and his representative that you will hire Alan Turner. We didn't do a background check. We were told that's Ichiro's interpreter. If you don't hire him and make him a full-time employee of the Marlins, he's not a Marlin. And so he may be the only employee I've ever hired without doing a background check. By the way, an amazing man, Alan is. First class in every way. But do I know where he went to school? No. Did I care at the time where he went to school? No. Do I care whether he was the interpreter for the Red Sox, the Yankees? No. Didn't matter to me at all. He came with Ichiro. That's the same here with Ipe. He came with Ohtani. So don't blame Andrew for that.
Okay.
In terms of everything else, we can certainly talk about it. And you haven't even mentioned Nez yet.
No.
No one's talking about Nez, the agent, and that's a huge story.
Why aren't we talking about the agent?
You should be. Nez is the one, they're calling him Ohtani spokesperson. You sure that wasn't Nez? Where there's a 90-minute ESPN interview and then all of a sudden realizes, uh-oh, and then has him recant it, disavows the interpreter, and then changes the story the next day. Meanwhile, that's all that happened at yesterday's statement reading, was a reiteration of what the Dodgers have been getting out there since the story changed last week.
One of the things that, you know, I think people, I mean, I knew this, other people around baseball knew this, I'm sure. Interpreters are more than interpreters for these guys. They are valets.
Obviously.
They're I use the phrase fart catchers. I mean, they do a lot for these guys in terms of their day-to-day existence. I get back to this, David. I'm not going to lose Shohei Ohtani because I'm not going to hire his guy as an interpreter. I would not want to go in front of the media and say, well, Shohei went to Toronto because we didn't want to hire his interpreter. But I just, there's just, hey, the due diligence just strikes me as very.
I'm telling you, Jeff,
odd.
I didn't do 1 second of due diligence on Ichiro's interpreter. Not 1 second.
Okay.
I knew that he had
You're
been
locked
with
out.
Him. Listen, I mean, half a life being in the right position right. at the right time. And we could say the Dodgers are not lucking out with Bauer and with Shohei. But again, what bothered me most about yesterday is A, the way it was dealt with by having no questions and it was really just a statement. And B, if he didn't say yesterday, the interpreter Ipe had access to my account.
Mm.
I have no idea that he was doing it because he had the authority to do it on his own. Short of that, and even that I don't believe, but short of that, how do you explain $4.5 million going missing? People are talking today, guys, about rich people can miss $4.5 million and not even know it. Let's put that aside and let's pretend that's possible, though I can't fathom it. But let's pretend it is. We're still not addressing the main issue, which is how do you have authority on the account to do that? And all he had to do yesterday is say, hey, he's had authority on my account since 2018, but he didn't say that.
Do you think the organization's worried about performance going through this with Ohtani?
No, I think they're more worried that he doesn't pitch next year and that they're paying him all this money to be a two-way player. And I think they're worried about their rotation in general, and I think they're worried about their season, and they don't want Ohtani to become an embarrassment when he is responsible for so much revenue and value for that team. And this was part of the plan yesterday to try to get Ohtani back to being Ohtani. I think once the lights come on, he will not be distracted. The team won't be distracted. But they certainly have an excuse now if they don't win the whole thing.
Yeah, David, it's very hard for an organization like that to just stay out of it, isn't it? Like, it's very hard to do that.
You know, we always got involved with our players, and we wanted to make things right. We wanted – when you run a team, I can't tell you how cocky you feel. You feel like that you can do anything and that you can say anything and that you can play by whatever rules you want. But there are times, mostly, when that's not the case. And I think the Dodgers are just in a position where they're reacting so much, and they realize that when there's so many stories out there and you're doing crisis management, that mistakes are made. And I think that's all that's happening.
Yeah.
So if you're Rob Manfred, how important is it that when you do this investigation, you don't damage the product? And by that, I mean, one of the things Rob, I think, was really good, look at the Houston Astros scandal. Who paid the price? A bunch of non-uniform guys or the manager, a GM? The players themselves, they got off okay. Even, you know, I go back to the steroid scandal, and Rob's got a playbook for this, right? Because he was buds involved in that. I go back to the steroid scandal. Yes, A-Rod, Clemens, all these Bonds, great players implicated. But when you get to the Mitchell report, it's a lot of just guys. And I wrote this the other day. I think there are guys in the Hall of Fame right now when the Mitchell report came out and said, oh, thank God. There is this aspect of Rob Manfred where he has to protect the product, doesn't he? And the product is the guys in uniform in the field.
There's no doubt. And there's big business. MLB in Japan is big business. They want Ohtani, and he is really the face of the league. And with the good comes the bad. But your point on how this investigation will come out, believe me, Rob does not want to have Ohtani suspended for life. He doesn't want to suspend him for a year. He takes no pleasure when a star player tests positive for steroids. It's not great what happened to Robinson Cano or Ryan Braun. It's not positive. By the way, Nez, Ryan Braun, don't forget that connection. So I would only say that Rob knows for this investigation, he cannot be swift. And that's both the good news and the bad news. No one's expecting it to be solved tomorrow because it's a process, and no one's expecting anyone to say anything. So I think what Rob will do is not address it except when he meets the media, like opening day, all-star game, postseason. And I think his message is going to be clear. We're investigating the matter. We want to find out exactly what happened. And I think you leave it at that.
There are people out there who are writing and saying, of course, that get used to this because Major League Baseball and professional sports are legalized sports wagering. It's reality. It's a reality in this network. It's a reality. It's a reality everywhere. Is this a warning? Understanding, let's leave aside whether or not Shohei actually did the gambling. Do you think this will be taken as some sort of learning moment for baseball?
Can it? I think, unfortunately, gentlemen, this is now a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I say that because on this morning's Nothing Personal, I realized that what would have been the top story 364 other days was not my top story this morning. And that's what's going on with Porter and the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
That is a major gambling issue when he removes himself from a game, maybe injured, maybe not. And all of a sudden, there's bizarre amounts of money being bet on props regarding this player. That's a lead story that Adam Silver can call Rob Manfred and say, thank you. But I am concerned that these types of stories are just starting, not ending.
Okay, David, let's move on. I have to ask you about opening day, and I want to ask you about the American League East, because I know you're really into, obviously, because you've been in front offices opening day. What's the conversation like? How happy are front offices that it's finally here? Me and Jeff joke all the time, and I've been through a bazillion spring trainings. I hated it. It's the worst time of my year. I hate it. I just wanted to show up, get off the plane. They tell me where I'm going. I get back on it, and I go where I'm going. But how happy are organizations about it basically being over and most of the players that you count on are finally here?
Yeah, all you want to do is get through spring training healthy. By the end of spring, you're just tired of it. You're so ready for opening day to happen. Of course, at the beginning of spring training, you're so excited for it because it means the season's starting. The focus right now in the front offices is finishing up roster management, choosing your active roster for opening day, getting all of the contracts signed if you're adding members from the not on the roster, if you're adding them to the roster. And then you start the grind and the routine of the baseball season. And what I loved about baseball over the 18 years is falling back into that routine that starts opening day and then watching the flow of the season happen. It's always better when you think your team has a chance, but even when your team stinks, you say to yourself before opening day, hey, we could be the surprise team this year. So everyone's got hope in the front office as of today, and the hope is like gas in a car. It dwindles down to empty for 29 teams every year.
Did winning the World Series change your change how you viewed
Great
opening
question.
Day from that point on?
It changed how I viewed every day. It actually, it's funny you asked that. If I were on the couch, the therapist couch, I would tell you that it was both the best and worst thing for my career, because I was chasing it every year after that. And it actually informed baseball and business decisions I made that otherwise likely would not have made, that almost felt desperate. And it's because I wanted that feeling again, because the feeling is so good. So I would say yes to your question.
How do you think the Orioles will handle expectations this year, expecting to win the East and go deep in the playoffs?
They're going to rely on Corbin Burns to stay healthy and to be a leader in that clubhouse and to not complain about anything. They're going to have to deal with some regression. They're going to have to, because it's almost impossible to believe they will repeat the type of year they had last year. And you nailed it. Expectations are a whole new ballgame. And don't forget, they have a new owner starting tomorrow. So that owner is going to want to interject himself, and he'll say, I'm not involved, and the baseball people are going to do their jobs. But every new owner gets new owner-itis, and it will be interesting to see how big a case Mr. Rubenstein has.
What do you think will be a bigger deal for David Rubenstein? Signing a free agent, perhaps going after a Jordan Montgomery, or extending getting those young players locked up?
So it's two different types of PR. Extending players, when you sign your own player, we always would celebrate, hey, we locked up our guy. But all those young players already have six-year contracts anyway.
Right.
You just don't know what you're paying them. So, yeah, we bought out a year or two of free agency, but it's so far from now that this current window will likely be closed by then. You're witnessing a little bit of that in Toronto now, where when the young players get older and more expensive, you feel your window slightly closing. It's always better to sign a free agent in terms of the outgoing PR, because you feel like you're adding to the team and bringing new blood, new excitement. So I think he'll go that direction this coming offseason.
David, one more before we let you go.
Yeah,
you mentioned the Blue Jays. Where do you think they finish? Are they good enough to make the playoffs in your mind?
So I'm doing my predictions tomorrow, and the last division that I'm really struggling with is the AL East.
Yeah.
Because I can easily rationalize a scenario where Toronto finishes in first and in second to last. I've got the Red Sox finishing last in every one of my scenarios, but I can see Toronto in first, second, third, or fourth. I just can't decide. It really is so important what happens with Toronto's pitching. Everyone's going to say it's about Guerrero, quote unquote, returning to MVP form. I don't think that's the key to their season. I really do think it's the key is their starting pitching depth and health. And I think that I say that about every team, and I'm generally right, because that's the thing that you don't plan for, because you always hope that you're going to get through the season healthy, but no one ever does.
David, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks,
be well.
David. It's good to see you finally.
Have a great day.
Yes, take care. David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal, the podcast with David Sampson, former MLB executive. Lots of thoughts on Shohei Ohtani. How would you feel as a teammate of his?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure they're trying to say the right thing. I wouldn't care. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I got my own thing to worry about. I'm trying to, you know, there's a couple of future Hall of Famers.
Well, I was going to say, I would argue that you know, having guys like Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Clayton Kershaw, because, you know, people are wondering, is this going to have some sort of... I just don't think it's going to have... I don't think it's going to be a distraction. I don't think it's going to have an impact. If Shohei hits 35 or 40 home runs and play, I just...
I don't either.
I don't think it's going to have an impact.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Look, they'll give him a hug and say you need anything.
Wrap him in more bubble wrap.
Yeah, maybe. You need anything, come and see us. But other than that, look, it's very individual. I mean, it's a team sport, but it's very individual, and they will say the right thing. But behind the scenes, they'll go home and they'll go, you know, thank goodness it's not me.
Listen, you know, it was funny hearing David talk, and David and I go back to kind of the same vintage when it comes to baseball. Listen, I can remember I can remember covering teams where clubhouse guys used to take bets for players. Run over, place bets. If you're in Philly, go to Atlantic City and place bets. You know, I find I have to check myself a little bit here, and I kind of failed to do it with the interpreter thing because I'm saying, you know, you need to have due diligence. You need to have due diligence. But I really don't think we have any idea about how guys who make a ton of money go about doing their business. And I thought of a story when David was talking. I remember Tim Raines. You know, Tim Raines used to get an allowance from his agent when he played. Mm-hmm. His agent would take, and he'd give him an allowance. Mm-hmm. And I've always remembered this story. The media traveled on the Expos charter when I started covering the team. And we had something happened. There was a road trip to, the first city was St. Louis. I don't know where the other city was. But basically we were told, hey, we're going to have to get out of here early after the game. So you're going to have to just pack garment bags. You know, no big suitcases. Pack garment bags. Carry it on the plane and away we go. That was fine. So, you know, we get on the plane. We're sitting on there and we've all had our garment bags. They've gone on. I remember Raines getting on. He's got like a little shower bag. And he walks by me. I go, hey, what do you got somebody to pay? Do you pay somebody to bring your clothes on for you? He goes, no, man. I'm just going to wear what I'm wearing, get up in the morning, go out and buy suits. So you're going to buy suits for a 6-day road trip. You go, eh. Mm. And that's always just kind of stuck with me that we really don't understand, I think, some of the day-to-day things that professional athletes depend on other people to do. But you've been around guys who made a ton of money. You know what I mean.
But it's different when somebody has, you know, your bank account. That's a whole different ball of wax. So yeah, look,
absolutely.
That's the part of that's
what I just don't understand.
It does,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, who? I mean, how much money he's probably got in one of those accounts? I mean, I'm sure he's got more than one, and if not two or three or four or five. But how does just? I know he's a friend, but how many friends are you going to give bank account numbers to? And I understand the issues of coming to the States from Japan. Like, I get it, but still, really.
And I've You know, and
it's just odd.
The other thing that hasn't been said enough here, too, Mike Trout will tell you and has told people, Shohei Ohtani speaks to his teammates in English when he's in the clubhouse. Like, I'm not saying that he would want to appear necessarily in a legal hearing doing it entirely in English. Sammy Sosa, when he was in front of Congress, had an interpreter. I remember very well a 30-minute conversation with Sammy Sosa in English in the Cubs clubhouse. It's just a lot of guys sometimes they fall back on it. But this story's got a lot of legs, and it's and David Sampson's right. It's not going to be over. It's not going to be over soon. Speaking of which, Sam Blum covers the Angels for The Athletic. He was at yesterday's news conference. He's done a lot of reporting on the interpreter. He'll join us next. Greg Maddux as well. Don't go anywhere. It's Blair and Barker. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wait a minute. You mean they want us to do another hour?
Yeah. We're tricking them.
When that happened.
How about that?
Wow. Welcome back to the second hour of Blair and Barker for March 26th. Our new time slot, 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet, 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. We'll also be doing Blue Jays talk following. Assorted Blue Jays games.
Yeah.
And the season starts on Thursday. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk Thursday, by the way. The season starts on Thursday in Tampa against the Rays. Four-game series against the Rays. Of course it does. Four-game series against the Rays. They're already. The Rays are working in their underground city. Oh. They got that little hole behind second base.
They got something.
Sucks all the base hits in. Four against the Rays, three against the Astros, three against the Yankees. Now, the good news is the Rays got some injuries. You're not going to see Verlander. The Astros pitching has kind of been shredded. You're not going to see Garrett Cole. DJ LeMahieu was on the IL. So at least the Jays will be getting those three teams when they're not at full strength. On the flip side.
So you're saying 8-2 road trip.
On the flip side, the Jays themselves will be without Jordan Romano and
Swanson.
And no, I'm not saying, I'm not predicting, I'm not making any bold predictions about.
6-4 would be nice.
I mean, look, 2-2 against Tampa.
5-5 does nothing. It does nothing.
Here's what's going to happen. 2-2 against Tampa. 1-2 against Houston.
Yeah, you know what 5-5 does?
Two and three. They're going to beat the Yankees 2-3.
It brings all the haters right back out really early what they didn't do in the offseason.
I don't know if it necessarily
does. That's exactly what it does.
I don't know if it necessarily does that. I don't know how many
6-4, 7-3.
I don't know how many people realistically expect.
6-4? I mean, come on. All the things you just said about the other teams, what they don't have?
Yeah, I also mentioned the Jays don't. It's not like they're going to be
at full. They still got four really good pitchers. Their lineup seems to have figured it out.
Team approach.
Huh?
And, of course, everybody was in the best shape of their lives. So.
Well, a couple of them. Mm. The ones that mattered, anyway.
Jose Berríos will get the start for the Blue Jays. We are awaiting word on Kevin Gausman. He pitched yesterday, 3 hits, 7 strikeouts against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Seemed happy after the game with the results. Seemed to be happy that he wasn't worried about health and was concerned about stuff and the stuff he needed to work on. So we'll probably know more tomorrow. The Jays will work out at Tropicana Field. And then we'll also, I presume, know a little more about Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson, although at this point they're on the IL.
I tried to do some digging during the break about how he felt after the start yesterday, and I got a very bad emoji back. So, I mean, I guess they don't want me to know.
He felt that, or
no,
it was basically
no, like
the
yeah, yeah,
your number,
you know,
one
absolutely
type of emoji.
Oh, yeah, there, okay. It is.
Just wanted to.
That's what I got back. So,
you had me concerned there. For
No. It was. He's fine.
Greg Maddux will join us at the bottom of the hour. Hall of Fame pitcher, who was inducted in 2014, 4-time Cy Young winner, wow. World Series champion. I voted for Greg Maddux on one of my MVP ballots one year when I was voting in the National League. I voted him MVP. A bunch of us did. I think it got like 13, 14.
I almost want to say that's why you shouldn't have a vote.
Great. He was great.
Pitcher. Not a player.
Could not be. Guaranteed win. Guaranteed.
So once a week.
Guaranteed.
What about What about the other games?
You can
shrug all you want. It's
guaranteed.
He's a pitcher. And
guarantee
he's one of
you're
going to
win a game.
Ever.
Guarantee you're going to win
best
a game with Alex Rodriguez hitting. Nope. Guaranteed you're going to win a game. Barry Bonds hitting. Nope.
Right. So you're going to this year. You would vote for a pitcher as the MVP.
I absolutely would vote for a pitcher.
Should
for
take
MVP.
Your vote. They should take your vote away.
Well, I don't have the MVP. An MVP.
You should vote. You should have your vote taken away.
Well, I don't have it. But, yeah, I'd vote for a pitcher for MVP. I have no problem with that.
Man.
Isn't pitching and defense most of the game? Who could the Jays lead? Well, we'll deal with this later. We're going to talk to
Sam. Well, I'm right,
Sam,
you're
Blum
wrong. We just dealt with it.
Well, no, we'll talk about it later.
We just dealt with it. It's quick.
I want you to think about this. Who is the one player or person the Jays could least likely afford to lose for a long period of time?
Pete
we'll
Walker.
Talk about it. We'll talk about it after Sam Blum covers the Angels for The Athletic. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Sam, thank you so much for doing this. Hey, terrific job on the George Santos CV that the interpreter had. Look, you're at that news. At that news, I hesitate to call the news conference because there were no questions asked, obviously. Anything change as a result of that? Did you come out of that 15 minutes later going, okay.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how I would put it. You know, it's like, you know, you're in there and I think a lot of people had a lot of skepticism entering it. I think a lot of people have a lot of skepticism exiting it. But at the same time, I mean, it's good to hear Shohei go and say that, you know, and you know, not have his representatives do it, not have people who are, you know, quote-unquote sources around Ohtani. And, you know, he needed to come out and do it. I still believe he needs to actually answer questions, too, you know, not just from reporters, but, you know, possibly even from investigators. And so I think that to me will be more indicative of what's real and what's not here. There are real legitimate questions about, you know, how Ipe could have possibly been stealing money without Ohtani knowing. And that's a question to me that is still very much up in the air and still something that, you know, I would have concerns about, you know, just in assessing the credibility of the story. So I think it was good that he said it. I think that it makes it more believable. But again, with this story and with, you know, the way Ohtani's kind of been coddled and handled throughout his time in the major leagues, you know, it's so much of what, you know, comes from that, you know, whole Ohtani operation, I think has, yeah, they've not established credibility, I think, with the public and with the media in a lot of ways.
That's a great way to put it.
Absolutely. Sam, is there a certain feel of the room? I know if I got stolen from, I'd be chapped. $4.5 million is a lot of money. Was there any feel of that? Like he was just, you know, how dare he? Like when I was watching him, I didn't feel that. Did you feel that?
You know, I did actually to some extent because it's so rare for Ohtani to ever, you know, do something like that or ever be critical or ever, you know, say something with you know, definitively. And so for him to be that definitive in this and to, you know, not seem to hesitate with it, that, you know, having been around Ohtani's, you know, everything he's pretty much said over the last 3 or 4 years, that's where I felt like he was kind of stepping out of his comfort zone in the way he was talking about it. So to me, that did give it some credibility. But again, this is all about assessing credibility, and it hasn't been established yet with anybody, I think, in this particular situation.
Sam, he didn't feel guilty. Like, you know, when somebody's guilty of something, they it's the way they talk, it's the way they present themselves. You didn't get any feel of that. Well, you have to ask. Like, I'm sure that's what people that are looking into this are. That's sort of the feel, right? You got to get a feel of this. I mean, you were in the room. Did you feel any of that?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I don't know how much this was rehearsed. I don't know if it was written by him. You know, I don't know how many lawyers look over it. It's like, it's one of those things where you have to take it for what it is. And it's a statement that he read. He did not take any questions. I think you would get way more value in discerning how people say things if they're, you know, being asked follow-up questions and being, you know, put in a situation where they have to kind of just answer right then and there. That's kind of the beauty of any interview. And, you know, this was not an interview. And like you said at the top, I totally agree with this. I would struggle to call this a press conference or a news conference because that wasn't what this was. Like, you know, this was a statement reading and we were all there to witness it. And it was certainly something to witness, but it wasn't necessarily anything that I would take too much from in terms of reading between the lines on the way he felt or, you know, other than it was just it came with some, you know, measure of confidence and conviction, which I thought was important for on his behalf, at the very least.
You know, Sam, when I started covering baseball in the late 80s and 90s, you'd go into a clubhouse, there'd be all sorts of people there. I mean, agents used to come in the clubhouse. I mean, there were too many people in there.
Yeah.
Steroids ended that. You know, you started to see, I mean, that's when reporters started to, you know, you had to sign in and all this stuff. There was more restrictions put in place. Look, we had David Sampson on a couple of minutes ago, and David was talking about bringing Ichiro to the Marlins. And he said, he gave us his interpreter. It turned out a guy named Alan Turner turned out to be a splendid guy. But David said, I mean, we didn't do any due diligence. Ichiro wanted this guy. Okay. that's the guy that's going to interpret for him. Do you think this is going to change the way teams view the role of interpreters now? Because it has always kind of puzzled me that, look, LA's a big place. There, I'm sure you could find somebody who could interpret for your Japanese players that didn't necessarily have to be sleeping at the guy's place, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but I don't know if this would be like, in my opinion, like this was, the failure here probably would have been not doing a thorough background check on the guy. You know, if in fact he obviously did not go to college and said he went to college, like that might be a reason why you would have to investigate further into the things that he does in his daily life. You know, why he would have lied about something like that. I think that would, you know, a background check would create the impetus to maybe investigate further. But I mean, if a player, I think, you know, one of the things with interpreters and with Ohtani that people don't always realize is that, you know, you need someone that you're incredibly comfortable with, because for Ipe, you know, he wasn't really, I don't even really consider him the interpreter. I mean, he was doing literally everything for him, which may be a part of how this, kind of the situation. Mm-hmm. He was doing everything for him. And, you know, you need someone who's really comfortable, who can help assimilate you to the new country that you're in beyond just, you know, translating and interpreting the language for them. So I would maybe disagree on that aspect of it. I just think that it's probably on the teams and on the agency that's, you know, representing the client to make sure that they're surrounding themselves with people that, you know, are, I guess, above board to some extent and not, you know, spending $4.5 million of their dollars on gambling debts. But even so, like, just if you just checked and made sure he went to college, I think that could have started this investigatory process a lot quicker. You know, had they come to that conclusion that, you know, we all came through just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, and I think I mean, you know, that's a really good point. At the end of the day, I think both his rep, Ohtani's reps, and the Dodgers, you know, they haven't helped the situation, because the initial reaction was, it was all over the place. And I guess I've got to think that maybe Nesbaleo, his agent, I don't know, maybe he didn't think at any point he'd need a crisis management expert to come in for Shohei Ohtani, because the guy's pretty much been.
He needed one for Ryan Braun.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. So he would have a number handy, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
He would have a number handy.
I believe it is the same people.
Really?
If I'm mistaken.
Okay. Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. How are the players going to handle this? The other players, do you think, like, you know, that clubhouse pretty well, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, like Kevin and I were talking about this. I got to think that, I just got to think it's going to be business as usual. I don't know. That's a veteran team. I think they know what is expected of them this year. Do you think it'll have any impact at all?
You know, I would think that most of these guys are going to rally around their teammate. The thing about that, if there's any sort of consternation that would come out of this, is that, you know, I think Ohtani is going to have to answer questions at some point. And so, mm-hmm. The story is not going anywhere. And so when Ohtani doesn't answer questions, it follows on to the next guy.
Right.
You know, what does Mookie Betts think of this? What does Freddie Freeman think of this? You know, what does Tyler Glasnow? What does Clayton Kershaw? What do all those guys think of the situation? So I think that that's where I think there could potentially become, you know, a modicum of frustration on that team, where it feels like he's not necessarily engaging in the accountability aspect of it and then putting it on others, which happened all the time with the Angels, but it was less about accountability and more about talking about how great he was.
Mm.
So it was, you know, and those players weren't Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, you know, it was younger guys typically. So the dynamic is slightly different, I think, with the Dodgers than it was with the Angels. But I agree with you. I mean, I don't think this is going to be the kind of thing that gets out of the clubhouse. And I imagine, at least in the, you know, in the short term, you know, these guys are going to rally around him. Believe there were some quotes post-game about that, you know, just like, I believe him. And, you know, he came out and said it, and he's the one who's on record of saying it. So, you know, and I tend to believe Ohtani to some extent, just, you know, I just have such a hard time believing he would be involved in gambling. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, not that I know the guy that well, but it's just that kind of, you know, strange credulity for me, at least, that he would be a degenerate gambler. But I guess you never know. So I'm guessing the teammates will rally around him, and I'm guessing that they'll, you know, at the very least, you know, have his back publicly. And, you know, we'll see how it manifests itself over a longer period of time as this story evolves, because there's undoubtedly going to be more information, more things that we all learn, you know, in the coming days, weeks, and months.
Sam, while you were talking, I was thinking that Ohtani this year only has to worry about hitting. He doesn't have to worry about both. What do you think the ceiling is for Ohtani offensively?
You know, I think there's a couple. You know, he's also got to worry about his rehab, which is important. Yesterday, it was so ironic. I mean, he finishes that statement, and literally 5 minutes later, he's, like, in the same clothes, out on the field, doing his first throwing since having surgery. So, you know, he's got other things to focus on, and now obviously he has to focus on this. And he and you know, so much of his life was taken care of by Ipe. You know, he really was able to focus on baseball because Ipe was managing his, you know, basically answering texts for him, managing, you know, his scouting reports, like, you know, basically being his trainer, his coach, all these things. So, you know, you take that out of the equation, I do wonder how that impacts Ohtani as an actual baseball player. But you're right. I mean, you know, he doesn't have to, you know, go out there and pitch every 5 or 6 days, and you know, he can really, you know, hone in on the hitting. And I mean, I have a hard time believing he'll be any better hitter than he was last year. Just what we saw last year was, you know, absurd with the Angels, and you know, certainly deserving of the MVP award he got. And you know, I'd love to see him have an even better offensive year. I mean, he's a fun player to watch. You know, we'll see how this whole situation plays out, what impact it has, but. He's had a nice little start. Those first two games are pretty good, and outside of the massive roadblock that is this story, you know, we'd probably be having a much different conversation about Ohtani. But well, you know, we'll see how he does on the field.
Sam, really good stuff, man. Thanks for doing this. Terrific, yep. Terrific reporting as well, my friend. Be well.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, you too, guys. I appreciate it. Take care.
Sam Blum covers the Angels for The Athletic, and it was Sam's story on the. The CV of the interpreter that kind of put a different wrinkle on this. And you know, look, again, David Sampson's right. You're going to sign Shohei Ohtani. You're basically going to do whatever Shohei Ohtani wants. But I don't know, man. I'm sorry. Lying on a CV, maybe everybody does it, but...
Every once in a while, you got to be your own man, though, right? I mean, you got to pay your own bills. That's what it sounds like.
He wasn't
doing anything.
And this, you know... Again, this goes back to the Angels actually more than it does the Dodgers. You know, this guy's claiming that he worked for the Red Sox and he didn't. I don't know. I mean, to me, that tells you something about a person's character. And I don't know if I was, if I was Shohei Ohtani, I did choose your friends better.
Yeah, they were just hoping he wasn't on that plane in Toronto, the Dodgers. They didn't really care who his interpreter was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure at some point they'd go, Shohei, Greg, yeah. You're not in the plane. About your interpreter. Can we talk about your interpreter?
Let's worry about it.
Greg Maddux is going to join us in a few minutes. All right, so I tossed this out to you before Sam joined us. Because you were bugging me because I voted for Greg Maddux as the most valuable player 1 year, and Barker, of course, being a position player, thinks that all pitchers are fundamentally flawed human beings and not...
No, they're pitchers.
And not worth being MVP. So I'm going to ask you this. Who is the most irreplaceable person on the Jays right now?
1 through 4 in the rotation. It's not one guy.
Pitchers.
It's one through four.
Pitchers.
But I could also name 1 through 4 in the lineup.
Okay.
I could also say that.
You don't
a
have
a collection of a lot of guys. Oh. They don't have an Ohtani on this team, do they? They don't have Mookie Betts on this team.
This team got a chance.
They have Freddie Freeman on this team.
This team got a chance without Kevin Gausman. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think so. What's your chance of making the playoffs?
You and Mitch White made up all of a sudden, or what?
Of winning the American League East? Absolutely not.
Making the playoffs without Kevin Gausman?
That'd be tough.
Okay.
That doesn't mean he's the MVP of the league.
Your point...
That's a big difference. The league.
Your point was that pitchers can't be most valuable players. And I disagree.
Well, it's happened already.
Pitchers can be the most valuable player.
There's more value in a guy trying to figure it out 7 days a week at the highest level than one time a week.
But a closer.
No. Again, no, it's 40 times. It's not 142.
And if you go,
it's like George Springer. You're thinking, oh, man, he played 140 games. They're not saying 40 games.
Man, oh, man.
It's totally different. Like, it's...
Endless source of disappointment.
If you want to... That's called a Cy Young. That's what that's called. It's called a Cy Young. You have your own award.
It's not an MVP award. You have your own award.
You do.
Pitchers have their own award. Poor hitters. Poor hitters don't get any love.
It's everyday players. That's why you don't see DHs, except the guy we were just talking about for an hour, winning a MVP.
I think David Ortiz did. Didn't he win one?
That's two guys. It's the same guys won it twice.
Anyhow.
It's not anyhow.
So is that...
It's happened. That's the point, right?
Guy doesn't even play in the field every day, and you're giving him an MVP award. Yeah.
Yeah, that's because he made 25 starts, and he was elite, and he's a unicorn.
Enough unicorns.
Well, I mean, it's...
I guess we have to stop calling Ohtani a unicorn.
Sort of this year we do, until he comes back next year and he's throwing 105 miles an hour because he's better after whatever's wrong with him. It's not Tommy John, is it?
Well, he might need...
Whatever that is he's got.
You know, he might have some incentives he needs to reach as a pitcher to cover the $4.5 million that he kissed away.
So you're buying into the run prevention. Like, that's the first... You're looking at MVPs is all about the guy standing on the mound once a week.
The most important part, most important person in the game is the pitcher, period.
So the lineup has nothing to do with it?
No one's saying it doesn't have anything to do with it. All I'm saying is it is conceivable. I don't like the way you were so dismissive. Oh, pitchers. Pitcher can't be an MVP. I think it's conceivable that a pitcher can be an
MVP.
Your opinion.
I know I've seen it at the highest level. I've never done it because I wasn't good enough. But I've seen it done at the highest level, trying to play every single day, trying to play through injuries and ailments that normally you wouldn't try and do because you're an elite offensive player and that's what you're supposed to do. Yeah, I've seen elite players trying to do it. It's rare you see a pitcher doing it. It's rare. I mean, they have to be
well that
to just to see the elite that they have to
that
do.
Is,
I'm not saying that they don't have
that
tweets.
That is a fair
and,
point. That
and,
is a fair
but
point.
But it's different, right? Point. Running the bases and playing that's a position. Point. You know, I got 4 days between starts.
That's
I can figure
point.
It out. You know, they got a bazillion people that are going to put ice packs on you and do whatever it takes. Position players, it's after a game, right? You got 3 hours to figure out how to duct tape it up and get out there and be your best. That's how it is. That's for me. That's the difference. Like, I feel that way.
You still haven't answered the question. Who is the most irreplaceable individual?
I just told you.
The Blue Jays.
I just told you.
One,
this year, if they want to make the playoffs,
you gave me eight guys.
It's four,
you gave me eight guys.
Because all eight guys got to do it. And you could probably throw in two guys in the pen.
Oh, stop.
and a coach or two trying to stay out of the way.
There isn't a team out there.
In the biggest games.
You just,
like, there. That's facts.
Get off the fence. Get off the fence. Give
rare.
Me a name.
It's rare I'm on the fence.
Name. Give me a name. Bo? Bo's gone for 4 months. This team got a chance?
It would be hard.
Gossman's gone for 4 months.
I think it's more doable without Kevin. I think it's way less doable.
Okay.
The shortstop and the guy you're trying to Swiss Army knife and you're in the top four spots and trying to put him in places.
It's one of those arguments. It's one of those sports talk radio arguments. I get it.
I gave you 10 guys, though.
Yeah, you did give
that
me 10 guys.
That has to happen with the Jays for them to go where they want to go. I mean,
guys.
It's 89 wins. It's the American League.
Career,
it's not the National League. Now, the National League, I would give you a name if they were in the National League, but they're not. They're in the American League, which in the National League, they would have to win 83 or 84 games. American League, they win 89 to 90.
What?
That's a big difference. So it's a collection of a bunch of guys. It could be one or two guys in the National League.
You just don't
if they're
want
a National League team.
You just don't want to annoy
I gave
people.
You. I gave you an educated answer.
No, that's not an educated answer.
That absolutely is.
You sat in the fence.
Mm-mm.
The correct answer, by the way, is Kevin Gossman is the one person this team.
Your MVP of the American League.
Could be.
Ah, come on. If it is, I'll never. I shouldn't talk to you again, ever.
Could be. He's getting a lot of love, Cy Young voting. Vegas has him down.
Okay.
I believe he's a favorite of Vegas.
All right.
AL Cy Young.
I mean, Corbin Burns pretty good, too.
I picked him to win the Cy Young this year.
Who
Gossman.
Did?
I did. I picked Gossman to win the Cy Young.
Did.
Could be my MVP this year.
Of course you did.
Could be my MVP this year.
Do you have a vote for the Cy Young?
No. Because I don't I'm a BBWAA member, but I'm not at don't do anything.
After how you've been talking, I've officially taken your vote away from here on out.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't have a vote. I have no problem with that. Somebody's just reaching out to me.
Too much pressure?
I think this is your dad telling me. Yeah. Your dad agrees with me.
Yeah. I bet he does.
He does. So anyhow, this got started because Greg Maddux was scheduled to join us. Hall of Fame pitcher who did, in his day, collect a sizable number of MVP votes.
There you go.
Back when writers were much smarter and much more engaged in the process.
That's what you're going with.
Anyhow, we're looking forward to having Greg Maddux join us. One of the questions I want to ask him, I talked about his durability. Kevin, the pitchers that were hurt in spring training, I'm gonna run through this before we take a break because I want you to think about this. Eduardo Rodriguez, Paul Sewald, Lucas Giolito, Justin Verlander, Jose Urquidy, Eury Pérez, Devin Williams, Cody Senga, Garrett Cole, Brian Wu, Matt Brash, Sonny Gray, Max Scherzer. Now, Sonny Gray hurt his hamstring. So, I mean, that's different. But all the others, back, oblique, elbow, shoulder, forearm, elbow, back, elbow, 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 and Max Scherzer.
Overthrowing,
back.
Not mechanically sound, abusing a secondary pitch. There's your three answers.
We'll find out what Greg Maddux says. We're going to take a break.
Can't wait.
And when we come back, Hall of Fame pitcher Greg Maddux joins us. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker, the final half hour of the first 2 hours show.
Blessed. Fast.
It's flowing by. Always flowing. It always flies by when you admit that you're wrong, as you did off
air. I have not.
The debate we were having before
it's
the break was whether or not pitchers should qualify for MVP awards. And that's one thing that you can weigh in on the back leg line, 416-413-3959. See what I did
there?
See
what you did.
416-413-3959. Leave a voice note for us. We will go to the back leg line. Every,
if you say it is, we won't play
every
it, but
Friday.
You can phone
every
in.
Every Friday. See, it says right there on TV. Leave us a voicemail. 416-413-3959. You can tell me, yes, Jeff, pitchers should be eligible for, well, they are eligible, but you are within your right to vote for a pitcher for MVP. You could call up and weigh in that argument. You can ask Kevin some questions, leave some comments. Maybe even tell us what you'd like to see in the show if you want. We'll endeavor to do that every Friday. And a reminder that the Jay season starts on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a 4-10 first pitch or something like that?
Sure.
You have no idea. In Tampa against the Rays. And we'll be doing Jay's Talk immediately following that game. As always, you can catch Blair and Barker wherever you get your favorite podcast as well. The show usually drops in podcast format. An hour or so after we're done. I love doing that because it puts pressure on people. Our next guest, I mean, I could rattle off a bunch of statistics about him because the statistics are fairly impressive, to say the least.
Oh.
He is a Hall of Fame pitcher, 4-time Cy Young winner, World Series champion. I do have his numbers here. 194 wins, 88 losses, a 2.63 ERA. That's the eighth highest victory total all time. 5,008 in the third innings is 13th all time. But maybe the most amazing stat, and something we want to talk to Greg Maddux about as he joins us, is the fact that in 23 years, he spent 15 days on the DL.
Wow.
With a inflamed nerve in his lower back. Let's bring in Greg Maddux. Greg, thanks so much for joining us on Blair and Barker today. We trust that you're doing well. First of all, we understand that you're a new grandfather. Congratulations.
Awesome.
On that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, my son had his first son yesterday, so we're excited, and I'm actually heading over to his house right now to see the little fella.
There you go. Well, be well, and hopefully everything's gone well for them. And of course, I want to mention that you will be hosting the Baller Dream Celebrity Poker Tournament at the Cirque Resort and Casino on April 27th and 28th. It's a fun event. It's a charity event. And looks like a lot of fun, a lot of great guests. And again, 100% of the proceeds for the event will go towards the charity. So I wanted to ask you a lot of things I want to talk to you about, obviously, but, mm-hmm. but the first question is, it's opening day for the Blue Jays on Thursday. It's opening week. As a pitcher, getting an opening day start, how much did that mean to you? And what, Greg, for you constituted a good start to the season?
Well, I mean, obviously it means a lot to be the opening day starter. You know, the team's kind of relying on you to kind of to try to get that first win. You know, they think their best chance to win is with their best pitcher, and it's always an honor and a privilege to be named the opening day starter. And, you know, you want to get your team that first win of the season as quick as possible, and opening day is the best time to do it.
Greg, for you, what told you you were ready coming out of spring training? At what point in spring training did you feel you were good to go? Or did you have a checklist of different things you wanted to go through? Or was it just strictly feel of a certain pitch? Or how would you describe that sense of, okay, I'm ready to go?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing is to get in arm shape. You know, I think you want to feel like you can throw 100 pitches, you know, that first time out. So I think getting the arm strength and getting it up to 100 pitches for opening day was always a big key for me. I think, you know, you're probably not going to be in great shape until the middle of May. You know, you're going to pitch your way into shape as the season goes on. And but just to be able to throw 100 pitches would be good. And, you know, you're always tinkering with your feel. Your feel's an every 5-day thing, whether it's your breaking ball or your changeup or your fastball location. You know, you're always, for me, I was always trying to improve on what I didn't do as well as I would have liked to in my last start. And, you know, that varies from start to start, obviously.
Greg, how big was velocity early in the season for you?
It was never big for me. I mean, I had a different philosophy. I relied more on movement and location and change of speeds than velocity. You know, I felt like I threw hard enough to pitch. You know, I threw hard enough to have success on the mound, but it was all about movement, location, and the ability to change speeds. Pitch execution, and you know that still plays today as well. You know, I know guys are throwing a lot harder today than we did, and you know, we threw harder than the guys that, you know, were 30 years before us. So it's the way the game's always been going. But the bottom line is execution and keeping the ball in front of the outfield works best, even in today's game.
Greg, I would think if you pitched today the elevated fastball, you could use that as a weapon. Is that something that you would like to have used a little bit more? Now, again, I'm sure you were location. It was middle away. It was down, you know, and you would change speeds like you mentioned there. But the elevated fastball, it's a thing now, right? It gives hitters nightmares.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could you have used that to your advantage now or then a little bit more?
100%. And it gets called, you know.
Yeah.
We got 3 or 4 inches off the plate some games, you know, on one side of the plate, it was usually away. But, you know, guys are, you know, today the strike zone's 2 feet higher. So, you know, the strike zone's definitely bigger today than it was when we pitched. And, you know, I'm sure you would try to take advantage of it, you know, every game.
Now, I know that your brother Mike is with the Texas Rangers, and they Max Scherzer is one of the pitchers who are injured right now in baseball. But, I Kevin and I were talking about this in the last segment. You know, the Jays have Alek Manoah, Jordan Romano, and Eric Swanson hurt. You know, I'm going through a list of pitchers that aren't going to be available to their team on opening day. Right, Eduardo Rodriguez, Paul Sewell, Lucas Giolito, Verlander, Arcadia. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and on. Now, I think every year we tend to look at injured pitchers and go, man, it seems like there's a lot of injured pitchers this year. But, Greg, it seems like there's a lot of injured pitchers this year. And do you have any idea why that is?
Well, there's been a lot of injured pitchers for the last decade. You know,
yes.
I think organizations now rely on depth, I think, more than as much as anything right now. I think you know, you look at all the rosters last year, and you know, it's hard to find a team that didn't use 20 plus pitchers last year. So I think depth is definitely a very important thing with building your team. And, you know, you hope your guys stay healthy, you know, and when they're healthy, you know, you got your best guys out there. But, you know, like I said, you got to have a lot of depth in your organization, and hopefully Toronto does this year.
Sorry, Jeff. How do you back off that, Greg? There's no money in, I don't want to say pitching anymore, but there's a lot more money because these organizations are saying, you know, let it air out as much as you can, as long as you can. It's not let's control, you know, let's add and subtract early in the game. There's not really any of that. How would you, I think, sort of relay the message? If you were, say, a pitching coach to a younger guy and say, let's back off of that, maybe you'll stay healthier a little bit longer.
You never want to tell a pitcher to back off. You know, you always want to throw it, you know, almost as hard as you can, you know, especially when you're throwing your fastball. You know, I think, you just have to remember that it's a pitching contest. It's not a speed contest. I mean, if it's a speed contest, then, you know, Randy Johnson and Nolan Ryan go undefeated every year, mm-hmm. but it's not. You know, luckily it's a pitching contest, and whatever pitcher executes the best, makes the most pitches, keeps the ball in front of the outfield, is a guy that's going to win. And it's been that way for the last 100 years in baseball.
Yeah, I think, Greg, I may have shortchanged you a bit on win totals here. I was looking at your Atlanta stats. You had 355 career wins, which leads me to the next question, actually. 1987 with the Cubs, 6-14, 5.61 ERA. The next year, 18-8, 3.18. And I've always wondered, what changed between those 2 years?
Well, I learned how to change speeds.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to pitch slower better. And I think command got a little bit better the next year, but the biggest adjustment was my changeup was a lot more consistent, and I didn't hang as many breaking balls. I mean, it's really that simple. You know, my execution got a lot better, and I was able to pitch slower, plain and simple.
Greg, if you had one piece of advice to give a young person about pitching, what would it be?
It varies from pitcher to pitcher, but I think it's very important to try to get a strike every time you throw the ball. You know, there's no such thing as a setup pitch. The count and the previous pitches will set themselves up automatically. You don't have to purposely throw a setup pitch. And just to try to get a strike every count, even 0-2. You know, 0-2 is definitely the hardest count to hit in, and it seems like that's the count pitchers are scared to death to throw a strike in. I just think 0-2, that being the hardest count to hit in, make them hit 0-2. Don't wait till the count goes to 2-2 or 3-2.
Greg, I know that you're a resident of Vegas. Obviously, Vegas, mm-hmm. It seems like the A's, depending on who you talk to, it sounds like there's a chance the A's might end up in Vegas. What would that city be like as a baseball market, do you think?
Well, hopefully it'll be great. I know the Knights and the Raiders have done very well since we've got those two teams here, and hopefully baseball will follow suit. And I know myself and a lot of my buddies are excited to have a baseball team here, and I think the city's going to get behind it. Obviously, you want to put a winner on the field, and hopefully the owner will make that happen.
Greg, is there a pitcher in today's game that you would buy a ticket to watch? Now, I'm sure you would never have to buy a ticket, but my point is that you would like to go and really hone in on and actually watch him work through it. You know, it's don't have my best up. I'm going to work through that. I'm actually going to go in the stands and pay attention. Is there a guy that you would like to do that with?
Yeah. You know, I'm a little biased towards the Rangers because my brother's there.
Sure.
You know, obviously DeGrom, you know, in my mind, best pitcher I've ever seen. You know, he's able to throw it like Nolan Ryan and command it as well as anybody ever has. And, you know, I really like Eovaldi. I think he's a true pitcher. I think he gets it. He understands pitch selection and the mental side of the game. And obviously he throws hard, but he relies on pitch selection and execution probably more than anything. You know, anybody that wants to go out there and pitch their way through instead of brain dead Chuck, I'm very happy to watch.
Now, you spent time with the Rangers last year in spring training. Again, your brother Mike was the pitching coach there. Did you get a sense then that something special was happening or might happen with that team?
Yeah, absolutely. The Chris Young, the GM, kind of set the mindset the first day of spring training. It wasn't about winning the division or making the playoffs. It was about going after the World Series ring. And he followed suit. He built the team. He got the right pieces in place as guys started getting injured during the season. And the team responded. So it was nice to see. You know, it was nice to see, my brother and Boach and the rest of the coaching staff along with the players – you know, accomplish, you know, all they could accomplish last year.
You mentioned the DeGrom. Now, look, it's power and location. That don't come around all the time. Now, when he comes back, say, in August, I'm thinking that's somewhat, that's the word is, he's going to try and come back in August. How will it look the same? Like, that's the thing. You went through as much as he's went through, and say he gets back on a mound and it's just not there. Like, he just, you know, sometimes you're scoreboard watching. I mean, he's a human being. He's going to, you know, everything's feeling right. He turns around and that velocity's just not there. Greg, how's he handle that?
Well, that's kind of, you know, you have to kind of wait and see. You know, every time you're coming back from an injury, you're probably not going to be as good as you were before. So, but, you know, hopefully he'll have enough fastball to still be able to get guys out. You know, if he's able to throw his slider and his off-speed pitches off of a, you know, a 95-plus fastball, I think he'll be able to do just fine.
Greg, we're going to let you run. Yeah. We really appreciate your time today. Again, congratulations on being a new grandfather. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your grandchild. I'm sure you will. And we really do appreciate this. Thanks, man.
It's an honor, Greg. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Greg Maddux, Hall of Fame pitcher. Oh.
I mean, I'd vote for him for MVP. How's that? Like, look, I'm joking. But look, just listen to the way he talks and how he goes about, you can understand why he only missed 15 games.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you have to, it's sort of the routine of how you can get through a season. That's a big deal. And and his mindset of always throwing strikes, sounds simple, but why don't these guys do it? They'd rather strike you out. If they walk you, they're okay with that. Like, they're trying to strike you out first. That's the difference, I think, in a Greg Maddux and today's pitcher. And you can even, I guess, say, call them throwers, not pitchers. That's sort of what you're seeing nowadays. It's intriguing listening to guys like this talk.
Yeah, you know, I look at that 1987 season he had with the Cubs, where he was 6-14, his ERA was 5.61. He made 27 starts, and I've always thought about this, the start of Greg Maddux's career, because when Javier Vasquez broke in with the Montreal Expos his first year, he was getting lit up, and there was no doubt that he had. I mean, Javier Vasquez had everything, was everything you wanted in a pitcher. He had the stuff, he had the mindset, he was a terrific athlete, and he was getting lit up. And it got to a point where Felipe Alou, who was managing the team, sat him down. Javier's getting down on himself, and Felipe said, "Look, here's the thing. Do you think I know what I'm doing?" You know, and Vasquez said, "Well, you're the manager." Yeah, and he said, "Well," Felipe said, "then if I keep sending you out there and this keeps happening to you, either I'm not really bright or I've got a lot of confidence in you." And he said to Vasquez, Greg Maddux, he said, "Go and look at Greg Maddux's career. Go and look at the early years of Greg Maddux's career." Vasquez came back anyhow to make a long story short. He actually ended up talking to Greg Maddux about that. And Maddux, I love that Maddux said, "I learned to slow down.
Yeah.
I learned to pitch slower." But
yeah, fastball almost as hard. That was one of the things for me anyway that I took away from what Greg was saying. Today's day and age, you don't get paid to do that.
Yeah.
How do you have the conversation with somebody to say, you know, spring training, we've had you want to throw this hard forever.
Mm-hmm.
How do you back off and almost throw as hard?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. Like, how do you do it? How do you know mechanically sound enough off the field what you're trying to do and mentally prepared enough that you turn around and it's just hard enough? I don't know if they can do that. It's interesting. That's why I said, how do you keep them on the field long enough? That's a big deal for him.
Looking at his numbers, when he was with the Braves, he was 194 wins, 88 losses, 133 wins, 112 losses with Chicago. He had good years in a ballpark that was...
Yeah, wins mattered.
You know? They did matter then because you were... I mean, you were
a starting
Greg
pitcher.
Maddux, you threw.
Who got paid to win.
Greg Maddux had 109 complete games. He had 109. He had 3 years when he was dominant. He had 4 years when he was dominant in the National League. He had 8 complete games, 10 complete games, 10 complete games. He threw over 200 innings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Like 16 years in a row.
Yeah, fewer things can go wrong if you're completing games, right? That's the whole thing. And it gives your team a better chance to win a game. That's how it is. It's just not that way anymore. Like, they're saying you'd rather see power and stuff than to pitch your way through ups and downs, and then they won't let you do it, right? The Khakis just they'll see. You know, how dare you face the lefties in the middle of the order more than one time, huh? No matter how it's looking.
How about Jacob DeGrom as a guy?
It makes sense. It's pinpoint control with power. Doesn't come around every day, and I wonder how Jacob deals with if the stuff is just not there. Like, he went from Superman basically to maybe not being Superman. Mm-hmm. He's mortal. Like, how do you, like, he wasn't at one time. Nobody could hit him. It's basically, I'm dominating you, and there's nothing you can do about it because I throw so hard, I tunnel a slider, I'm doing it with two pitches.
Yeah.
And I'm locating it at certain quadrants, and I can pitch through your weakness, and there's nothing you can do about it. And now he comes back after having all of these setbacks. And what if it's not 99? What if it's 94? Can he pitch at 94? Like, every once in a while, you just got to go, I got 99, you can't do nothing about it. I'm going to throw it right down the middle. 94, if you do that, it's getting hammered. And then it's not Jacob DeGrom anymore. I hope it's not that way because baseball's better with him being 99, locating with the slider, tunneling. But what if it's not? That's, I don't know. It's too bad this happened to him.
We talk about it a lot, but, I mean, the genie's out of the bottle here. Pitching isn't going to go back to the way it used to be, is it?
Well, it works. It's cheaper. It's cheaper to have, you know, you run them through, and you run them as much as you can run them, and I don't have to pay the Greg Maddoxes of the world to give you complete games because that costs our organization more. I'd rather run out four or five different guys that will give me a time and a half through the order, and then I run out a bunch of dudes that throw 100 miles an hour, and it's cheaper that way, and I can spend my money in different spots and you know, it's longevity. It's easier to do that. I don't have to think it through. I don't have to use more assets to go out and find the Greg Maddoxes of the world. They've simplified it enough to say with a computer that if you do it this way, most of the time you're going to win a lot of games if you have enough talent and you know, if you make adjustments when it's warranted. So
I think it was Dan O'Dowd or somebody in the MLB network. They were talking about velocity and you know how, and the question was, look, every year we hear people say, well, you just can't base it all on velocity, and every year the first thing we do when we talk about a pitcher is velocity. And Dan's point was, you know, to get noticed as a young pitcher, you got to throw hard. And he said what happens is we as an industry bring so many pitchers up so early, and we're bringing a guy up who's only 4 years removed from being noticed because he threw 100.
Yeah.
And what's he going to do?
Yeah.
He's going to come up and throw 100.
First time you say Ricky Tatum's name, what do you say? He hit 98 today.
Exactly.
It's not that he was unpredictable, or he was eliminating people with a devastating slider with two strikes. He hit 98 today. Like, that's the first thing you mentioned. And if I'm saying it, you don't think they're saying it to the player?
And that's one reason I have to say that I don't know if I've changed my mind about enjoying watching a guy pitch as much as I did with Chris Bassett last year. Because, like, when you, I was like you when it started. I thought, oh my, you know, this guy's going to be moody, and he's all, you know, he's always. And I'm going, oh, I don't know if I, it's just going to be hard to watch.
Yeah.
And like halfway through the year, I'm going, I love watching.
You know,
this
halfway
guy
through
pitch.
The year, you know what
I
happened?
Love watching.
Is he
pitch.
Found the cutter and the sinker? It's again, I understand it's how hard they throw, but it will always come down to fastball command. Once he found those two and then can sort of sprinkle in the different speeds and get you out front and make you look silly and feel silly and get quick outs, then you started seeing the best of Bassett. And hopefully for Jays fans' sake, you're seeing that again.
I loved watching the way he was using the pitch clock to his benefit. And I was thinking about that. Greg Maddux was talking, is there somebody around right now? Like, when we've seen – what we saw in spring training this year, we saw him throw he threw a 68-mile-an-hour curve, I think, in his last...
He's been doing that. He'll do that.
I know, but it's... You see that, and it's just kind of...
He reads bats.
You know? Yes.
Well, he doesn't have 99, so occasionally you got to read a bat and get a guy out that way.
All right, that is it for us again. If you're listening to us via podcast, leave a rating and review.
Not a bad first day?
I guess so.
How about it?
2 hours.
I was right and you were wrong about something. I mean, it's...
Blind squirrel finds nut every now and then. We'll be back tomorrow from 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. Have a great day.